Good evening, everyone. This is Ebony's Bones. I'm your host, Ebony Johnson, alongside our co-host, Ebony Johnson, Professor AJ Lowe.
I hope that you know I'm not Ebony Johnson.
Whatever. We are here with you every week from 6 to 7 p.m. on Wednesdays, and we appreciate you all for staying with us and being with us for a year now. We haven't been here every week on a Wednesday, but we have been doing this show for a year, so we appreciate you rocking with us. And tonight we're going to talk with CEO and co-founder of the Green Line Initiative, Asia Morris. She's on the line with us, and we're talking about the Green Line Initiative and building generational wealth. Good evening, Asia.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
Appreciate you for calling in and being our guest for the hour. I want, on our show, we like to dig into topics, and so we're going to talk about the Green Line Initiative, and you all have an event coming up this weekend and various things that you have going on. I want you, however, to start us out with, when you say wealth and when you say generational wealth, what do you mean?
When I say wealth, I mean having an asset that you can pass along to another person upon you expiring. When I say generational wealth, I mean not just leaving your house to your children if your insurance pays it off, but instead having a trust that may go to your grandchildren, making sure there are things in place so there's generations, not just you to the next generation, but their children even. That's what I mean by generational wealth. I want us to have money that our grandchildren will touch and hold.
And so with that in mind, what is the Green Line Initiative?
The Green Line Initiative is a social enterprise. Our mission is to increase Black generational wealth through real property ownership and investment. The real property ownership, home ownership, is one of the single largest, most impactful ways that you can build generational wealth. For most people, it's one of the biggest investments that they'll ever make. And so by changing the narrative, by encouraging Black people to invest and own their own homes instead of renting, that would help decrease or shorten the wealth gap that we have currently. What Greenline is an organization that takes a look at all of the processes that are in place to help our community on its face, but that our community doesn't necessarily take advantage of. And what we do is put someone who's looking to become a homeowner into a home that's been neglected because there are tons of programs and opportunities to help us renovate it. But most times, people in our community don't have the time. They don't have either the skills or the money to do it themselves. So we stand in the gap, and we provide the financing. We provide the background, the professional skills. We provide the time to get it done. And then we still sell houses at a quality, affordable price point.
For the conversation about just us needing to own our own homes instead of renting them, I have questions about that when it comes to, but do we own the land? Do we, people are having challenges with certain, for instance, here and other places with gentrification and with property taxes going up at under with no control. How is home ownership really of great benefit to us in our ability to own and maintain the home, and then think that we'll be able to pass that down when we're looking at issues such as gentrification and hiking tax rates and for property ownership?
I'm taking a note to make sure I hit your point.
Thanks. But sorry, I'm like thinking.
An
and
amazing
talking.
Question. Hiking tax rates, and to answer it, yes, this land is our land. The east side of Kansas City, due to redlining and historic unfair racist practices even, have pushed Black, brown, historically marginalized, vulnerable populations over into this community. Now, you mentioned gentrification. Let's start with gentrification first. What Greenline does by turning renters who are already in this community into homeowners in this community is slow down gentrification. When you rent a home, the landlord can put you out and sell that to someone else at a much higher price point. More often than not, people don't look like us who can afford to pay them much higher price points. So what we're actively doing is buying the land and buying the homes on the land and redeveloping them so that we can pay the same amount for a mortgage that we were paying for a rent that went to an out-of-state or an out-of-town investor who didn't care about our health or our welfare. So gentrification is slowed by us becoming owners of the land that we have been occupying and inhabiting for a long time. You asked about the hiking tax rate. That is another concern. It happened already on the west side. They started selling grandma's house, or when grandma passed, they didn't have the paperwork together to say who the home passed to, and so the home would go to the city, and a speculator would buy it for pennies on the dollar. And then they redevelop it, and they sell a $250,000 house. There aren't too many people who are willingly living on the east side right now who can afford a $250,000 house. So that means we're bringing in outsiders who are naturally going to change the culture of the neighborhood and the environment. In addition to that, because their house is worth $250,000 and it's sitting next to your grandma's house, which may be worth $100,000, her property taxes increase. And on the west side, there wasn't much consideration given to the impact on that community. But for Greenline, we sell our homes at 95 to no more than 100% of the retail value. And because of redlining, homes in black and brown communities are still appraised at about 85% of what they'd be appraised if they were in other areas. So we're actively trying to stave off gentrification. We're actively working towards, we're looking at legislation that could help maybe grandfather in the people who have already lived in a home that hasn't been redeveloped to make sure their property taxes aren't negatively impacted. It's not just about what your intentions are. It's also about your impact on the community. So the Green Line Initiative, our impact on the community is to uplift it. And we don't want to have the people who invest, participate, and buy a home from Green Line to be benefited while the people who don't are negatively impacted. So we're here to work to prevent hiking tax rates for the rest of the community, but we still want to make sure that as this land is our land, that we buy this land, we own this land, we live on it and inhabit this land, because it's a beautiful city. We have such beautiful housing stock, and it's just been, I guess, a perfect storm of unfortunate circumstances that have left us. 64128 is the eighth most vacant zip code in the country. So basically, we're living sort of in a wasteland, in a vacant, abandoned community. Right. Jeez. And it's just, it's encouraging because we can fix it, but it's discouraging because we let it get this bad.
Okay, so I have a question, because I definitely believe in revitalizing the neighborhood. But my question, or my issue would be, is how do we get people or increase the inclination for people to want to stay? Because as soon as people want to become, as soon as the black people that I know in the neighborhood start becoming interested in being homeowners, they automatically, like, the neighborhood is not where they're looking. They're like, I want to get to Lee Summit, or I want to get to Independence, or I want to get to north of the river. So how do we bring those people or encourage them to come back?
The Green Line Initiative, this is a movement. You can't be what you can't see. I'm trained as a corporate attorney. My husband's been in the finance industry for 20 years. He's a banker, right? He's been at the Fortune 1 business in the Federal Reserve Bank, and I've done all sorts of great things. When we lived in Blue Hills, which is between Prospect and Paseo, adjacent to Rockhurst University, the kids over there couldn't fathom that he wasn't either a lawyer or a preacher because he wore a suit to work. And they couldn't fathom me being anything other than a school teacher. And so just by us being in that community, we made such a positive change that we invited our friends to come out and experience it as well. My family, we live in the 3rd District. We proudly live in the 3rd District. And I invite as many of my young professional friends as possible to come back. But one of the chief complaints, again, is quality housing stock. I won't go into how much, but we put a pretty penny into rehabbing the home that we currently reside in, because we wanted to have the creature comforts of a home that runs for however much that we can afford given our status, right? But we didn't want to negatively impact our neighbors. So what we do in those instances, most of our homes through the Green Line Initiative are focused on first-time entry-level home buyers. So that's about 1,000 to 1,400 square feet, you know, a couple bedrooms, three bedrooms maybe, and they can go up larger. But for young professionals who are interested in coming back, we actively welcome them back, and we're working on some designs that have a higher-end market. But right now, they aren't our primary focus, honestly, because I want to get the people who are here first situated.
When you talk about social investment funds and the process for the Green Line Initiative, is that getting and crowdfunding, can you explain that, and how is that getting other people in the community involved? Is that getting anyone involved that wants to be involved? How does that work in order to help support the people that are in the neighborhoods on transition to own their homes?
Yes to all of that. Yes, it is getting the neighborhood something that's reachable or attainable for people who live in the community. That's two pair of fancy gym shoes, right? And so instead of overspending on X, Y, or Z, or conspicuous consumption on a high-end handbag, why not buy your loved one or your child or your high school, college graduate a stock in someone else's dream of home ownership? So that's the entry level for the community. And then social impact investors. There's just so many ways that you can reap multiple benefits from investing in the Green Line Initiative. We're in an opportunity zone. We have a 501c3. We have a foundation component where you can give tax-deductible donations that work towards empowering the community financially. There's no shortage of ways for you to put your money where your mouth is, because one of my biggest frustrations was always people talking about what's wrong on the east side and how nobody wants to live here and how we can't X, Y, or Z. But we've eliminated all of those barriers for people who do want to live here. So how are you going to help? And that's just basically my challenge to anybody, whoever listens. How are you going to help now that we have a vehicle to do something about it?
Come on now. We're on Ebony's Bones. If you've just tuned in, my name is Ebony Johnson. I'm your host, along with our co-host, Professor A.J. Lowe. And we're on the phone with CEO and co-founder of the Green Initiative, Asia Morris. She just put out a challenge to anyone. So if you have any questions or comments, this is a live call-in show. Feel free to give us a call at 816-931-5534. Again, the number is 816-931-5534. Ronkia Bates is on the other side of the glass waiting to take your call. Asia, in your process of you define yourself as an architect of urban economies, and there is a lot that goes into community, you know, and when people look for homes, and depending on who and what you are and what you do, you may need good quality schooling, you may want to have a good farmer's market or grocery stores or, you know, a number of different things. And so when you talk about architecting urban economies, I understand that having quality homes is a great part of that. What else for you goes into that to help us realize generational wealth and being able to be in homes that we want to pass down?
I love your style of question asking.
I always think I do that all the time. It's just a habit. But thanks for being with me. Thank you.
No, I absolutely, I really do, because you framed it, you set it up, and I'm going to try and knock this one right out of the park. So I am a self-proclaimed architect of urban economies, as you so aptly called out, because I know it's not just quality housing that we need. I know that to have a full, whole, healthy community, you need to have certain amenities to make sure that you're full, whole, and healthy. So in my prior positions, I was the vice president of mission growth for Goodwill, which meant I was responsible for creating programs based on what the community that Goodwill selected needed. I now choose my community. I now choose the 3rd and the 5th district of the community that I'm going to focus on and create the programming that is most effective for us. How you do that is based on considering the community needs. I have handled community needs assessments before, and I'm working on another community needs assessment now for the 3rd and 5th district to identify what we need. But as a resident, there are things that I know. It sounds like you looked at my LinkedIn profile. I welcome you all to visit and say, hey. But in addition to being the vice president at Goodwill, I was also the executive director at Dress for Success, which taught me about workforce development. After that, I was actually elected to and served on the board of directors for Kansas City Public Schools, everything east of Truth and south of Brush Creek. And so I understand that education is the cornerstone. Education is the foundation by which we can all lift ourselves up and succeed. Currently, Mayor Quentin Lucas appointed me to the Health Commission, where I was appointed, again, the education chair for all children in the city of Kansas City to make sure that their educational standards are met. And so I say I'm an architect of urban economies because I volunteer my time, because the work that I do, because every job that I've held since I graduated from law school has been focused on the urban core. Super proud product of the urban core. And I want for us to have everything that I had when I lived in the suburbs, because much like Dr. AJ said, you want your creature comforts and whatnot. I moved out to Lee Summit for a few years, and it didn't quite feel right. I loved having all that nice shopping near me and everything else that I wanted, but I also missed the community. And that's what I think our greatest strength and asset is, the community we have on the east side. Once we start moving home, the crime will go down. Once we start moving home, the blight will be eliminated. Once we start moving home, oh, you'll also see on my LinkedIn page, I'm an advisor for Local Code. That is the part of my work where I will be bringing the rest, the commercial component, to the east side of Kansas City. And that's where the holistic approach of what do we need? We need things like quality early childhood education. We need things like mental health care providers. We need things like pediatric support. There are so many things that we need on the east side of Kansas City. There isn't a shortage of opportunities for places for us to put them and monies for us to get it done. So all we need right now, honestly, is time, support, and encouragement. And soon enough, the east side will be revitalized, and it will be the place to be. And I'll be glad to be your neighbor, AJ and Ebony. Dr. AJ and Ebony.
Yeah. He's actually perfect. He's laughing. He's yeah. Professor AJ, but he'll take it. But it's Professor AJ.
Yeah.
You're good.
Not a doctor yet, but not a doc. You know, in the world of academia, they take that stuff seriously. So, yeah, not a doctor yet. But I'm
coming.
It's coming. Ebony's upset because I don't have too much to say because I completely agree. I know she's going to get on me. She's not really upset, but very seldomly does she see me where I'm mum in this chair. And I could just sit here and just listen because we actually agree with a lot of what you're talking about. Especially in regards to living in the hood, because I grew up like literally not too far from where you're describing, in the Blue Hills neighborhood, right over off of Wabash and 58th Street. So I know exactly what you're talking about. And I've watched that, and I still reside in the neighborhood. I personally can't see myself like going or living in a Lee Summit or a Overland Park or Olathe, because I appreciate the, like you said, the neighborhood feeling that even though these people are all around me, they're black, we can still have a conversation. I know that when I leave my house, I know that they're watching my house because they tell me, hey, when so-and-so was coming by your house today. Oh, okay. Well, I know that. Thank you. That's the neighborhood factor that I feel like I wouldn't be getting in another community. So I'm with it. I think that the conversation that me and you need to have is probably going to be more productive when we start trying to off air, when we start trying to plan some things.
I'm here for it.
Okay, thanks for that, AJ. You want to just talk off air? Talk to her off air. We're gonna take a station break. We'll be back shortly after these messages. And we're back here on Ebony's Bones, talking to CEO and co-founder of the Green Line Initiative, Asia Morris. We have a caller, Kurt, calling from Kansas City. Kurt, you're on the air. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Yes, I think what she's talking about sounds wonderful. Black professionals staying in the urban core would be a great thing. It traditionally hasn't happened. They segregate themselves out in the suburbs just like other rich people. And what does she have planned for people in the urban core who can never afford to buy a home because of their low income and their racist discrimination that happens at all levels and all kinds of ways? And the other objection I have is it's the Green Line Initiative. Now, from my perspective, green is in the Green New Deal. We need to take care of the planet. Having separate ticky-tacky boxes, separate income, separate boxes for each individual family on a plot of land is destroying our planet. So I've said enough. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Kurt. All right, Asia, did you get that?
Yes, I think his question, he had some great points about people of higher socioeconomic status divesting from the urban core and not coming back. I believe the question was, what the Green Line Initiative intends to do for those who, for those low-income community members who can never realize the dream of home ownership.
Yes.
I challenge Kurt to help me understand why they could not reach the dream of home ownership. Is it because of our unemployment rate? If so, let's help get them jobs. That's workforce development. Is it their finances? If so, let's work on some financial literacy. If they are actively paying a market rent rate, then there isn't any reason they can't afford a mortgage in the same community. So that'd be my challenge back on Kurt. Why can't they afford to own a home? Because our mortgage rates are the same as your rental rates. Unless, of course, it's Section 8 or HUD, and that's a completely different conversation because we need to figure out how do we get the community off of those supports, which we know sometimes they can stay on for a lifetime.
And that was going to be my question. You just
Kurt also, he said something about at the end there, usually with like Green New Deal or Green, what did he say? The end,
I didn't hear a question there.
Yeah, maybe he didn't have you're right.
I didn't know if he was asking about the reason we are called the Green Line Initiative. I wasn't sure. But Green Line Initiative, just it's in juxtaposition to the redlining that's happened. So this community was historically redlined. Oh. So now I'd like to draw a green line around it and invite in all social impact investors so the community that has been overlooked and divested from can have a revitalization.
That makes a whole lot of sense now. Okay, all right. Now, my question is about like what you said about people who are living on Section 8 or HUD. Like, how do we get those communities or those people off of that type of support system, which I don't even wouldn't refer to it as a support system as much as sometimes it can be, like you said, it's a lifetime thing. Even though poverty is generational, like it stays with us. It's hard to get up out of. How do we get people out of that generational poverty?
I think it's about changing mindset, because if you were raised, let's say, on government assistance and it was glorified or it was made to look as an easy or a desirable path, then I could see it being something that you continue. But again, I'm going to go back and say, children can't be what they cannot see. So show them there's another way. I mean, it's one thing if your parents are raising you in substandard dwellings or raising you in government-subsidized homes. But if you see neighbors, if you see strong, proud examples of what adulthood looks like and you have a strong, solid educational system around you, there's no reason why you can't break that generational curse of poverty. There's no reason why your parents can't want more for themselves or more for you down the line than where they are right now. I believe in the power of people. My mom didn't buy her first home until I was a sophomore in college. I went to 15 different schools, K through 12, because we moved a lot. And children, I think, are 15, 18% more likely to graduate high school if their parents own the homes that they're in. So teaching parents, teaching people about the positives of home ownership, that's the movement. That's the changing of the mindset, investing in yourself, investing in your neighbors. If we invested in our neighbors becoming homeowners, it doesn't matter how low income they are. We're able to help lift them up. And that's what the Green Line's about.
Thank you so much. We have David calling in from Kansas City. David, you're on the air. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Hey, guys. What's up? I checked in. I know AJ and Asia. So I wanted to check in and just ask a question real quick. When you guys are talking about home ownership, and I understand how owning a home gives you that feeling, that sovereignty, I get all that. What I wanted to know what Green Line is there anything that happens post-ownership? Because when I hustled my butt off and I got my first home, it was all fiscal, right? Just how to pay it off, what's going on. But actually becoming a homeowner, there were so many different things that I didn't understand or didn't know. So is there any type of education or classes for people? Because I think we, at times, we really look at just a piece of how to secure the loan and how to get that. But after that, there's a whole other world of home ownership that I think a lot of people don't understand.
David, question. When you talk about another world, can you give us some examples of what you're talking about, brother?
I mean, something simple as HOA dues, something as, you know, complicated as interactions with the neighbors, school districts, things that when you are thinking about buying a home, you kind of get jammed up with the aesthetics of it, right? I want a nice home. I want all that. But then when you actually, I mean, I know I grew up, I was raised by a single mom. You know, there's things about just maintaining your home. You know, how does that housing insurance work? How do you get your big appliances replaced? What happens with when that HVAC goes down? You know, there's a lot of things that people do not understand, and I've had to learn a lot of game after the fact.
All right. Thanks, David. We're going to let Asia take your question off air. Thanks for calling.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Hi, David. Great question. So, yes, there is education. I think it's a lifetime of education. And I think it's incumbent on all of us to lift ourselves up and to teach ourselves and to teach each other. For instance, you're eligible to participate with the Green Line. You don't necessarily have to have the best credit in the world, but you must be credit worthy. You should have a solid rental history to show that you're going to be capable of paying a monthly mortgage on time. Once you get inside, to make sure that you don't run afoul of some very common things that people who are historically or traditionally homeowners know. Like, we'll factor in, and yes, there is education. We'll teach you about homeowners insurance. We will factor in the taxes if we need it, if you don't suspect or anticipate that you'll be able to save that amount by year's end. We also do things like work on property tax abatement to freeze your property taxes for 10 to 20 years, so that you don't have to worry about that extra cost. We go through every, for me, my background again, I'm trained in being thorough, and data and processes are my jam. I want to make sure that I hand you a complete dossier, a complete packet of information, so you can walk into home ownership as complete as possible. In our homes, we try to include new appliances because all of our homes are vacant and blighted when we buy them, like they're abandoned. We take them down to the studs. We put new appliances in there, with the hopes that in 5 to 10 years when those break down, that you have your assets, your finances together to get those. But the Green Line is a lifetime partnership. So reach out to the Green Line if you have financing issues or any other shortcomings. If your home needs a repair, we don't want a Green Line home to fall into disrepair. If your home falls into repair and you can't get financing or a refi from a bank or whatever to handle it, come to us. So, yes, we want to make sure that you're successful in your home. Yes, if there is an issue with your home or something that you didn't understand, we definitely partner with. I like to say we serve as a liaison to the community to help make the home buying process much more palatable. And so I guess it's also the home ownership process. Thanks for the question, David.
And thanks so much, Asia, for answering. And I'm glad David did answer that question, because personally, I live in the city and I do rent because I don't want the maintenance of a home by myself.
Right.
And so the thought of having a home frightens me a bit because I don't want to do it by myself. And that's a part of my personal thought process, like, oh my gosh, okay, if I rent, I could just call somebody and say, hey, the light went out or this happened. And if I own a home, I have more responsibilities. So, you know, it is something to take into consideration.
You'll be happy to hear in the next phase of the Green Line Initiative, we're looking at co-op at purchasing multifamily housing. So you wouldn't have to worry about mowing a lawn. So you have a superintendent or a homeowner association to make sure that you can still own your place and be comfortable and happy in your place without worrying about grass and electricity and whatever that other stuff is. I feel you.
Wonderful. Because I'm like, look, either I'm going to have to partner, somebody else going to have to come in on this with me or something. But I'm glad that you made that comment. I want to give the number out to folks if you want to ask Asia a question or comment on the Green Line Initiative in building generational wealth and home ownership and community development. Give us a call at 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534.
I just want to say that was a great question, because I didn't even think about that. Like, I hardly even think about that. Thank you for that. My question before we went on break was about this idea of how we can get our people off of these Section 8 homes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do we change the ideas of the young people or the people who live in the city, right? Because what I've noticed, I mean, I live in the city because I choose to. Some people live in the city because they have to. Now, once they don't have to, they usually try to flee. But it's usually an idea, this idea of criminality is usually celebrated inside the neighborhood. And my question, how do we change that? Like, what ideas will we...
But what in line with that question, what is it about Section 8 that people want to stay on there for a lifetime?
I would say comfort. It's easy in the way that poverty, in the only way that poverty can really be easy, it's still uncomfortable. You still don't have everything that you want or need all the time, but there's a level of reliability, you know? And so just changing, because I believe wholeheartedly in the spirit, the effort, and the heart of Black people. Getting us to recall, to remember that strength and that hard work will get us back where we need to be, because I think people just don't see it working for them. People get discouraged. There's a ton of untreated mental health issues we have in our community that could keep people in Section 8 housing. There are just so many reasons, but until the narrative changes, and it should never be about shaming someone for getting back on their feet, but it should be more about getting back on your feet instead of resting on your laurels. I don't know how you change that, but I do know that we can work towards changing the narrative, and we can make it a positive to own your home, to own a piece of something, and then that might inspire or motivate, if not the generation currently living in subsidized housing, then the generation being raised in it to aspire for more than what their parents had. And that's the most that we can do. We can't change anyone's actions, but we can hope to inspire others to consider to begin living differently.
Okay, so another question I had was about businesses. One of the things that frustrates me about living in the city is that I don't have access to businesses. Like, for example, I got to go to, Lee Summit in order to go and play in a trampoline park, which I know that sounds juvenile, but it just is what it is. I got to go to Lee Summit to go, or some other place to go to a pool hall. We don't have access to these. So how could we change that as far as bringing businesses back in? Because most of our Black business owners usually stay in the suburbs.
You are correct. I mentioned previously my work with Local Code. It's a national organization that works on regenerative economics. Regenerative economics means that we're bringing things into the community owned by people from the community that provide services that the community wants and needs. For instance, working with a lovely young woman who is the sole proprietor for Aya Coffee and Books. Right now it's online and it's e-commerce, but in the future, I'd love to get her a coffee house bookstore on the east side, because Black people read, you know, because Black people like coffee, because Black people love to relax in a calm and sort of zen environment. There are so many other small Black businesses that just need an opportunity or a venue to be successful that I know there isn't going to be any shortage of those amenities coming in once we're open to it. I think historically, developers in Kansas City have focused on what is most profitable, especially on the east side and bottom line, but the Green Line's approach is to focus on the person first. So what would help a neighbor in this community the most? We ask ourselves that, and then those are the sorts of commercial retail facilities that we put in. And yes, you need entertainment. You need to relax like a pool hall. You might also need like a box gym or something. You might need, again, you need some physical care, pediatric care, mental health care. We might need a spa. You know, there's so many things that we need, we deserve, we enjoy that we don't have. It's just about taking the time and putting them in there.
Hello, I kind of wanted to go back. My name is Ronkia, by the way. I kind of wanted to go back when you were talking about the whole Section 8 thing. So my thing is, like, what do you think it will take to get our people out of this comfort zone when it comes to living on Section 8? You know, most people are just so content with living on Section 8 because I think they're afraid to own their own homes. But what would be that big push to get people motivated, you know, to, you know, own their homes and, you know, actually be a homeowner for the first time? Because not a lot of people, especially people around my age, because I'm 23, not a lot of people around my age is even thinking about owning a home. I think they're just content with either living on Section 8 or doing whatever works for them.
I don't have the answer, but I just hope that as they see us elevating as a people, as a culture, that they want to elevate with us, because you can't really elevate living on subsidized housing. I mean, you may be able to afford, you may be able to participate in conspicuous consumption, you may be able to buy nice shoes or rent, lease, I don't even know how you go, a fancy car, but at the end of the day, all of those things depreciate. Until you get out of subsidized housing, until you own an asset that appreciates, you will never, ever, I guess, realize a higher higher standard of living. There you go. Sorry about that, Rakia. And if you don't aspire for a higher standard of living, then we can't do anything for you. So it's, again, showing people by example, you can have a better quality of life. Like when you live in subsidized housing, I know they have requirements or things that you can and can't do. When you own your own house, they don't have checks. They don't have, you know, the other sorts of pop-ins or whatever rules happen for Section 8 and HUD. It's just, I mean, again, I don't have the answer, but all that we can do is lead by example, show people with our actions a better way to build pride and community and to strengthen what we have.
We do have Kurt calling back from Kansas City, Missouri. Kurt, you're on the air. Go ahead with your question and or comment.
Yeah, sorry to be controversial, but this sounds to me like the antithesis of Black Lives Matter. To talk about Section 8, most people on Section 8 housing are white. You know, to talk about black welfare queens just sounds to me like racism par excellence. This sounds like the scam of 2008. Let's get black people to invest in homes, and then we will defund them, and they'll lose all of their capital. And I'm sorry, that's the way I feel right now. Now, if you want to have a conversation, she didn't address the part about living in a single-family home where all of your energy goes into heating the outside air or cooling the outside air in the summertime. I certainly appreciated when she talked about co-op homes, but that's like a promise that I don't think she's ever going to fulfill, but I would love to see it happen. And thank you very much again.
Thanks, Kurt.
Thank you. Go ahead, Asia.
I think you're misunderstanding me, Kurt, and that's unfortunate. Not the antithesis to Black Lives Matter. I don't believe I'm perpetuating a stereotype of a black welfare queen. If you've noticed, I haven't mentioned, I didn't bring up black welfare queens. These are questions asked of me that I'm answering. And I'm also saying that I think it's well within everyone's power to raise themselves up if they're so inclined to. And I do agree with you that it's mostly white people on subsidized government assistance. So on those accounts, we are on the same page.
Now,
what else there was? Because there was a lot in there, Kurt. It's controversial, but you misunderstood. We didn't discuss... people live in substandard housing and they spend a lot of their money on utilities because it's not energy efficient. The Green Line Initiative works directly against that because we build houses up from the studs to a brand new home for you to make it energy efficient. So that's how we are avoiding those sorts of things and being predatory on our community. You also mentioned 2008, give black people homes, home ownership, and then let the bubble bust and take their funding back. The only difference is we are black people. This is for black people, by black people, and I won't ever do that because I haven't ever done that, and it's not in my DNA. So to, I guess, misunderstand so completely what I'm trying to share, I'll have to go back and listen to what the issue was, but I hope you have a clear understanding now.
All right, now. We're going to take our last station break for the show. You're tuned to Ebony's Bones. I'm your host, Ebony Johnson, alongside our co-host, Professor A.J. Lowe. And we are talking with CEO and co-founder Asia Morris of the Green Line Initiative. We'll be back with more after these messages. And we're back here on Ebony's Bones. Professor Lowe, you have a comment.
Yes, I have a comment for Kurt. One of the things I want to bring attention to when he brought up 2008 was the mortgage crisis. The mortgage crisis itself was something that wasn't created by black people. In fact, we were taken advantage of by bankers. It was actually bankers that actually came up with this idea of subprime mortgages, and they took advantage of not just black people, but also white Americans as well. Now, white Americans are, put it like this, when it comes to governmental support, white Americans are definitely in the majority, only because they are in the majority as far as the numbers in the country, period. Unfortunately, the stigma that comes from subsidized housing or welfare is usually on black people because of racial rhetoric that was used for political gain in the previous decades.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I just want to go ahead and clear that up.
I appreciate it. And to that point, this is Asia again. The Green Line Initiative is working to circumvent the predatory practices of banking, which is what happened in 2008, which is how we owner finance and through crowdsourced funding the home ownership. So what we're doing will effectively preclude that from happening again, Kurt. I hope you better understand.
Thank you for that. Asia, I want to get into, we have about 12 minutes left of the show, and I want to talk about the initiative this weekend. But before that, can you talk to me about your stance on housing being a human right?
Absolutely. Housing is a human right. Shelter is a human right. And it doesn't make any sense that we have people paying to live in substandard accommodations. I think it's incumbent on our community leaders, on our politicians, on lots of people to make sure, and this is, I'm speaking as someone who owns properties, I'm speaking as a landlord. I'm also speaking as someone who grew up as a tenant and knows a lot of people who are still currently tenants. Regardless of your lot in life, like if you own a home and you can't afford to repair, you have a hole in the roof and you get rained on, that's one thing. You need to work through that, find some financing for it. But if you're renting a home that has a hole in the roof and you've asked your landlord for some support and you still can't get it, that's a whole nother issue. And right now we have people throughout the city of Kansas City who lack access to the basic standards and quality of living. I met with a client today who was looking to move because his rental had sewage backing up on him. And his landlord didn't want him to take the payment out to get that repaired from his rent. And so they were in a contentious disagreement. Like these sorts of things on top of going to work and on top of coming home and having to care for children put undue stress and burdens on people who live in historically marginalized communities. And housing is a human right because in this community specifically, we have a lot of renters being preyed on by landlords who don't mean what's best by them, but instead just want to make as much money as possible. Housing is absolutely a human right.
No, go ahead.
Can you share with us the event that's taking place this weekend for the Green Line Initiative? KKFI is one of the co-sponsors of the event. And tell us what it's about, when, where, and for more information, how people can find out.
Yes. So on Friday, August 28th at 7 p.m., there will be Green Line Grows KC, a live stream benefit concert for the Green Line Initiative. That will benefit us. It will go directly towards helping finance someone's dreams of home ownership. There is merch available by the amazing Warren Stiles and the wonderful Jasmine Ali. There are so many top-notch artists performing. We have Radke, Stefan.
Yeah,
you, look at me. They call me Sauce. They have so. Yeah. I'm most proud of the fact that local black talent has rallied around us and our organization. I'm so thankful that leaders of every race, ethnicity, and hue have rallied behind us because they believe in what we're doing. It's a grassroots initiative. And so what people are sharing out about how the historic practices of systemic racism and oppression have negatively impacted housing and the East Side. And what they're asking is that we come together as a community on Friday to support more people realizing the dream of homeownership.
And it's online, correct?
Yes, it is. It will be live streamed on Facebook and YouTube.
And that's with the Green Line, if people just search the Green Line Initiative?
Yes. And you can go online if you would like to bit.ly/GreenLineGrowsKC, and it gives you information about everything.
Okay. And then for the Green Line Initiative, just in general, can you give the website address for the Green Line Initiative?
Yes. We are very, very simple as a team. Our website is www.thegreenlineinitiative.com.
Easy enough. Okay. I want to let people know that you can still feel free to give us a call in these about 10 more minutes here, a little less than that, at 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. Ronkia Bates is on the other side of the glass, ready to take your call. Asia, we've talked about this, but I want to circle back a little bit in the just with the story and the narrative of why the importance of people being able to stay and come back to their communities, and with especially given the Green Line Initiative, and you know, and there are many other people that are doing things to say, hey, we're building up the urban core. You know, there are different initiatives with Troost and, you know, in various areas where people are saying, stay, don't go out to another area if it's only because you're looking for better schooling or safety or just a better house. But what do you say to, like, I'm just thinking of a, let me say this, I'm trying to say it without telling who the person is, but I'll say I'm thinking of a person who has said, I don't want to live in the hood. I grew up in the hood. And they don't want to go back and live in the hood, nor do they want their, and it is a black person, nor do they want their children to live in the hood. And what, and it's because of their negative experience that they had. And so they are more comfortable living in a predominantly white suburban area. At least that's how they feel, because they don't want to go back.
You just named like 50 black people that I know.
50 black people I talked to today.
Right.
first of all, I might consider calling it what I think it is, which is self-hatred. Unfortunately, your friend had a bad experience growing up. But you can't change it by running from it, would be how I challenged that friend. The only way that you can actually effectuate real change is to engage and participate in it. And so be the change you want to see. And I keep hitting on headlines and beat a dead horse, because these are things that matter. I didn't have the best time growing up in the urban core, but I want it better for the kids who are still there. Like, I see myself in every child that is being raised on a rough and tumble block. And I want to make sure that child has a good quality education. What better way to do that than to be actively involved in my community?
And I want you to finish your comment, Asia, but I want to also say the other thing that I see it affecting when you say be the change, you know, basically be the change you want to see, is they have a child that also talks about the hood, a young child, and will make these comments and say, well, such and such the hood, or, you know, whatever in the hood. And I find myself struggling sometimes on how to respond to, well, look at what kind of scenario and picture you're painting for your child who is black and who's talking about the hood, and what narratives they're giving.
I mean, if you're comfortable with difficult conversations, I would call it what it is. That's self-loathing. That's self-hate. Please don't teach your child to hate themselves, to hate part of themselves. Being in and of the ghetto is a patently black experience. And while it might not be their experience because of your socioeconomic status, studies show that black men typically fall down at least one, if not two, rungs, financial rungs from their parents. So they very well might wind up in the ghetto. So I point that out to a parent who thought it was cute to teach a child to disrespect those who had less than them. But I call things as they are. You can't teach a child to love themselves when you're actively teaching them that they're better than parts of themselves, because our black experience isn't just based on where you grew up. It's based on our collective. And so if your child is raised in a Lee Summit, but they talk bad or think bad about the ghetto, they're going to be very surprised when they meet my children who are from the hood. you know, and proud of it, but also incredibly well-educated and incredibly well-traveled and incredibly well. All the things that you think you're going to get in the suburbs, you can have in the urban core. And I think you ill-equip a child for the real world because it's not the suburbs, and whatever that bubble is you made for them when they go out into the real world and talk about the ghetto and how they're different from it, and someone may see them and presume they're from the ghetto, they're not ready to handle that. So you're doing them a disservice.
I completely agree. One of the things that I noticed about that statement as far as, you know, well, once I get out of this ghetto or get out of the hood, I'm never coming back, is that when we look at the adverse, when we start talking about like things like the like integration or the police departments, like, well, you got to change those things from the inside. That applies to everything else except for our neighborhoods. We don't want to change that from the inside. We would rather change that from the outside and then complain about the racism we experience. I'm sorry. Me and you are like, we are eye in eye right now, because that is, I completely agree with you. I believe personally that you can't be pro-black and then not live around black people. That's just how I see it. Like, you can't be like, you can't want to empower the black community and then not want to live in the black community. So let me stop, because I'll get on a tangent.
No, I think it's powerful, Asia, that you talked about teaching us to love parts of ourselves but talk poorly about other parts of ourselves. And I don't know that we, you know, we've, especially in the society we live, is focused on a lot of individualism and not realizing that we are a part of the collective whole. And so, you know, when we do speak in that way, it is self-hatred. And I didn't necessarily think about it that way. I just know I would cringe sometimes, and I didn't have the words until I'm glad that you shared your sentiments to express, because, you know, I was thinking, well, I do, you know what I mean? Right, so what do you feel about me? You know, like, what do you, so you're kind of saying, they'd be, and you know, everybody think, well, I'm not talking about you in particular, but I'm just saying, you know, yeah, but it's like, but I mean, there is something to be said, you know, and this is factual. It's not even just theory. There is something to be said about when we see ourselves and the importance of seeing ourselves. Professor Lowe and I both graduated from Florida A&M University, and we've had a conversation on air many times about the value in seeing teachers that look like us and going, you know, and going to classrooms and just that whole community that's created, and some people feeling as though, no, well, you need to go to these other schools even though they're predominantly white, and you may suffer culturally. And I'm not saying all people do, so I don't want anybody call in and say anything about that. But I'm just saying, not seeing the value of seeing people look like us in positions and in various settings that matters.
Not just if, like, teachers. We're talking about black people. Like, the majority of the student body was black. The instructors were black. The staff was black. The librarians were black. Like, I graduated from Central High School. From going from Central High School to where all the black people were, well, there was a stigma that everybody that I went to school with was of the criminal element, even though that wasn't true, to going there and watching black professionals be molded and developed to the point to where when I turn on CNN, I'm like, oh, there's my classmate. Or when I travel to another country, my classmate's like, hey, I'm not too far from you. Let's link up for lunch. Like, that changed me on how I view black people, period. Because, like you said, I'm a product of the neighborhood, and I couldn't imagine living anywhere else. So again, I'm on a tangent.
And Asia, lastly, and then I want to go back and allow you to share the contact information too. But I think a big part of it is people talking about crime and feeling that it's unsafe, because maybe people could deal with, okay, you know, if the community is going to be up and developing and different initiatives are taking place, fine. But then what do we do about crime? And Asia, I want you to come back and talk about that point just one more time before we close. And also point out, I just want to also point out, it's crime in the suburbs too. A lot of things are underreported that are going on. And so sometimes we think there's more because it's reported in a way that makes it appear that way, but it is not in fact that way.
Yes, I agree with you. There is crime in the suburbs, just like there is drug use in the suburbs, and it wasn't until drug use impacted people that did not look like us that it became a concern for the entire nation. These are the disparate treatments that have us in this pickle that we're in. So about crime. Crime is higher in the city of Kansas City than it is elsewhere, but we must recognize that criminals are oftentimes engaging other criminals. I have been in and of this city for many years, and I have not experienced any crime, you know, and my home hasn't been burgled. We're going to knock on wood. You know, I haven't had anything untoward happen to me, but it could be because I walk in truth. I walk in power. I'm not afraid of my neighbors. If someone says hey to me, I say hey right back. Like, I have a very comfortable neighborhood in the 3rd District. When I lived in Blue Hills, I had a very comfortable neighborhood in the 5th District. You can find any reason to talk yourself out of anything. I'd much rather have my child go to a school surrounded by children who understand their experience and teachers who want them to learn and love on them, as opposed to go to a school where they might be a victim of several different sorts of crimes. One, because they might be one of a few children of color. Other times, because we know mass shootings don't happen in urban cores or in urban schools. I mean, there's all different types of crime in all different types of places. And I think it's a very easy cop-out, because if you moved into that community, you could help reduce the crime.
All right. We have been talking with Asia Morris, co-founder and CEO of the Green Line Initiative. And Asia, give the website address one more time.
The website address is www.thegreenlineinitiative.com. And if you missed the website for the concert on Friday, that's bit.ly/GreenLineGrowsKC.
Thank you so much. We've enjoyed our conversation with you, and we'll be tuning in to the event this weekend. And we appreciate you for the initiative that you're doing. And everybody stay tuned for American Roots with Nick Spitzer, and then later the Classical Challenge. Have a good evening, everyone.
Thank you so much.